Yes, you remember those ominous tones.
I do.
It's your weekly freak show, The Dark Mark Show. We're here on Renegade Radio, and also if you don't catch it live on Renegade Radio, live on tape, catch it on Spotify, catch it on iTunes, catch it on Stitcher, MyCast, everywhere you get podcasts. A lot of great past episodes. Like, rate, review, subscribe. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Hannah, my usual co-host, is not here today. She won't be here for the next few weeks, which I miss her already.
Wow.
What do you mean, Hannah? You and Hannah are going to get along great. But we got two great guests, and we're going to talk a lot of smutty stuff. Hold on one second. The camera went out. Hold on one second. The button in front, if you could do that. And then, do you see the screen? We're having technical difficulties with my faux pro, my fake GoPro.
What'd you say? $50 a prize?
Well, I spare no expense for the Dark Mark Show. Okay, here we go. Got two people, one that I've known for quite some time. I haven't seen you in like 3 years. And I just met you, but you come highly recommended.
Great.
All the people in the S&M community are lining up guests for me, which is great. This is Master Arcane.
Yes, nice to meet you.
I think it's Master Arcane. That's you, right?
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge.
And by the way, Hannah, my co-host, was remarking on how nice your body was.
Oh, outstanding!
Because I posted a picture of you with a crow's mask and you were shirtless.
Yeah, gas mask. Yeah.
Was that a gas mask?
Lighting someone's butt on fire, probably.
Is that what you were doing? I was trying to figure out what was going on.
Where did you see that photo? That was
that's on Facebook.
Oh, okay. I think it's by Ken Marcus. Took that photo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You were sliding a girl's butt on fire and you knew who was taking the picture?
It was Ken Marcus's birthday party years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was one of my slaves at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was up there and I was, yeah.
Yeah, you come highly recommended. You come recommended by Damon Pierce, legend.
Great. Yep, he is.
Who was recommended by Orpheus Black, another legend.
Yes, he is.
So we know a lot of the same friends. We've probably been in the same clubs at the same time.
Probably, yeah.
And you were lighting girls' asses on fire, and I was.
Yes, probably.
And girls were giving me wrong phone numbers. And and to my right, haven't seen you since 2015.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Lifetime ago, Mark.
You probably saw her here and there in some lairs and some clubs and things like that. It's our favorite submissive ballerina who rides motorcycles.
Vroom, vroom, bitches.
Yes, it's Kat Bilska.
Hello.
Yeah. Catface. Catface has been on some interesting shows. He was on a show where...
Orpheus.
Yeah, Orpheus set you on fire.
Yes, he did.
You were on a show where my friend Joe, who's a one-armed comedian...
That's right, with
shoved
Sin.
...shoved his nub up Sin Twisted's ass. And,
that is a classic.
Yeah, she sat on his... Yeah. On his nub, all sorts of things.
What did we call that? The nubby episode?
Yes, it was. Yes, feel the nub. She sat on his nub, and they were.
It was wrong.
It was a good one. That was
in all kinds of right ways.
That was our number one show of the year. But
shocker.
Before we get started, well, that's a real shocker, because the shocker is the one in the pink, but if the one in the pink is a nub, that's a real shocker.
I'll take your word for it.
Yes. Before we get going, our sponsors. Who sponsors this? Filth, this smut. Audible does. Go get an audiobook. They got all sorts of smutty audiobooks, too.
Do they?
Everything from 50 Shades of Grey, I Know It's Vanilla, to the Marquis de Sade. Every time I have somebody...
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Don't get 50 Shades of Grey.
Right. Every time I have somebody in the scene, they just start laughing at me. But how about some of the classics by Marquis de Sade?
Yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be good. That will be good. Is there a specific S&M book that you would recommend?
Besides my own?
Yeah. Is yours on Audible?
It's not on Audible.
Okay. What, like a classic?
A classic would be if Pat Califia, if her book is on Audible.
Yeah.
It was a seminal book back in the day. Everybody read it. It was extremely egalitarian between male dom, female dom, male submissive, female submissive, way ahead of its time.
Right.
Can't remember exactly the name, but her name is spelled his name. She did a full female to male
Okay.
sex change. is Pat, P-A-T, Califia. Mm-hmm. I think it's a variation of a Greek something, C-A-L-I-F-I-A maybe.
Right.
Yeah, brilliant.
Or any of the bestsellers, biographies, they have comedy. They got everything on Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com, audibletrial.com/DMS.
DMS.
DMS for the Dark Mark Show. You get a free book and a free 30-day trial at audible.com. They got Keith Richards' autobiography, which is great. Tiffany Haddish's biography. They've got all the Harry Potter books. So you got kids, play that in the car. They'll shut up. Whatever you want. Audible. Also, Hillary's Vanity. You know Hillary.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know Hillary.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been to her store yet?
I've been to every time she's brought her booth to all the events.
She's got a store now in Burbank.
Nice.
1018. I was at the pajama party this week.
Oh, my.
We had a great time. Her little dog Midnight was in pajamas. 1018 Hollywood Way. If you're in Los Angeles, go to Burbank. 1018 Hollywood Way, where all the other cool stores are, Dark Delicacies, Porto's. She's right down the street from Porto's. Goth clothes from extra small to 4XL. Smaller than you, bigger than me. They've got everything. Or just go to, because we have a worldwide audience. We have people listening in Russia, Turkey, Iran, all sorts of places, Japan. Hillary'sVanity.com. They will ship worldwide to you. One more. Got so many sponsors. Lionel Monroe Hat Company. Check them out on Instagram. Get a hat. I just shaved my head. I need a hat. Master Arcane.
Yes, sir.
I can see already this is going to be a great conversation. Okay. Do you feel the power?
I feel the power.
What is this that I don't have that he has? He just has this confidence, this power. How do I get this?
Decades and decades of practice.
Right. And the pirate look helps, too.
Sure.
Yeah, because you got the do-rag, the earrings.
I'd like to think that I have made all the mistakes so that other people don't have to, which is why I entered the world of teaching about this.
Right. Was there, how did you get into the scene, as it were?
Technically speaking, I was the only little boy of age 5 growing up on a street full of little girls.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever, I grew up in a really normal vanilla, no white picket fence, but about as vanilla as you get over, across the hill in the San Fernando Valley. And
wait, so there were no boys in the San Fernando Valley?
No, on the street that I grew up on.
Oh, wow.
So in our childhood games, I had to play the good guy and the bad guy, the cowboy and the Indian, the hero and the villain. And I found the part where I was tying up the girl before I had to go rescue her later on. And I was like, oh, I'm going to delay this part for a while.
Right.
And so that's
so
it.
So you already, yeah. You
I started really young. My first girlfriend, she actually came out to me first that she was into it. And I just kind of looked up at the sky and said, thank you.
Yeah. Now you're already like experimented with this and thought about it before the first girlfriend?
As much as you could in a juvenile fashion.
Like when you were going through puberty, you were like.
I was attracted to the whole idea of the female in bondage, the superhero comics, the cartoons, everything.
Wonder Woman, all that stuff.
All of it. And it's no particular thing. I had a very normal childhood. No particular thing to trace it back to, and it was just always there.
Yeah,
I've actually gotten to conversations about where did it come from, maybe a past life or something like that.
Yeah, I don't want to do a therapy session.
Do you believe
in past lives?
I believe there's more going on than meets the eye.
I'd
call myself spiritual but not religious.
Right. So perhaps in the past life you were.
Sure, why not?
Well, who knows? Who knows?
Could have been a giraffe as well.
Possibly.
In a past life. I don't know.
Or a fly.
Or a fly.
Yeah.
Exactly. On the wall of the Marquis de Sade's bedroom, and that's where
Oh, my God. That's a brilliant connection.
You just throw it, he just runs
right there, man.
How did you get in the scene?
Well, the scene itself was a very, very wavy path. I didn't get it started quite so young. In college, I would say I was brought the Marquis de Sade, 100 Days of Sodom.
Right.
And so I read a few, and then I just sort of put it away. I was like, this isn't, I'm too prim and proper. I, too, grew up in such a household. And then it wasn't until later on I read the Anne Rice trilogy, and that's what, awaked.
All these are on Audible, audibletrial.com/DMS. Go ahead.
I'm still working with Awake. Awoken?
You woke.
Jesus really. Christ. Yeah, so all right,
let's cut the bullshit. Who was the first guy that spanked you, and what happened?
Oh, well, so I got into the power exchange, actually, as a professional sub. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I worked at a local place on the west side.
So it was a professional thing at first. It
wasn't, oh, totally.
Yeah,
and even, like, once I stopped doing that and just had... Well, a relationship really wasn't many, just the one. It was so vanilla, privately, but publicly it was all about the dynamic. So it was an interesting experience.
Right. This is the one you still can't get over?
Oh, stop.
I got to help you get over this. We got
to
be.
There's nothing to get over.
Private and public.
Huh?
So we got to do private and public.
Which part?
All of it. All of it. I'm, you know. First off, you got to take your hair out of the bun. I have to be pulling your hair everywhere we go. And I've got to be spanking you publicly and privately.
And fire. Don't forget the fire.
No, we're getting to the fire. We just started. The whole hour of show. I'm like he says. I got to
delayed gratification.
Yeah, you got to yes. Anyway. So,
you need a nub.
Really? Should I? Actually, Joe's got a girlfriend.
A pirate hook. You know that would work too.
There you go. With
implements.
Now I have to digress, and I really want to get back to Master Arcane. But
really good.
Did that turn you on?
No, it was interesting.
No, I'm getting back to that. But when I had Joe, who
no,
had
it
enough,
did not. I was just in awe.
Because Sin was getting turned on.
I could tell.
Yeah.
She wanted more and more. I remember that episode like it was yesterday.
Right.
And that I will never forget the moment where the nub went in.
And both their faces lit up.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she was faking it.
No.
But not the third or fourth time.
No. And anyway, so he's got a very beautiful girlfriend now. I'll show you pictures. He's doing very well. I'll tell Joe you said hi.
Please do.
So you had girlfriends. You're experimenting. You're getting pretty deep into this.
Yeah, no, my first girlfriend was completely into it.
How old were you?
I was 17.
Okay, and she was?
20.
Okay. Mm. It seems to be a pattern. Older women seem to be, yeah.
Yeah, I was one of the lucky ones who got introduced by someone with a little bit of experience.
Right.
Now, she had no experience in this, though. It was purely fantasy for her.
Okay.
So we both, it was actually on my prom night.
Right.
And we got back to my parents' house, and she turned to me and said, do you have any fantasies? And I thought to myself, there's no way I'm telling you what's going through my head, because I was still embarrassed about it.
Right.
Or I didn't know how I could share it with an adult, right?
And anybody else would be like, statutory rape.
I was like, oh my God, you read my mind.
Yeah.
And so she turned to me and she said, do you have any fantasies? And I said, well, how you go first. And she said, I'd like to be tied up and treated roughly.
Mm.
And I was just, that was it. That was the door flew open. And she and I were together for 2.5 years. We did a lot of bondage and a lot of role play.
Right.
And
so you were like, funny, you should mention that.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I got some old karate belts upstairs I can go get.
Oh, wow. Karate belts. Is that good?
They work.
Yeah. I got a lot of ties, so I think I've been using ties.
Yeah, ties work beautifully. I had a slave in Australia who she actually, under her bed, she had a collection of about 100 men's ties.
Really?
And she never had a guy to use them on. She fantasized about it forever. And then she met me, and she's like, I have to show you this.
Right.
Please use these on me.
Now, did she have you put them on and then whip them
all
off?
At the same time?
Oh, no. I'm not a tie-wearing kind of person.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does this go from this amazing relationship, this older woman, I say older, she's 20, you guys are experimenting together?
A lot, yeah.
Now, did you start going to lairs?
No.
You just did it by yourself?
Yeah, back then it was in Northern California, so it wasn't really part. I didn't become part of the public community until I moved to Amsterdam in the 90s.
Oh.
And I went for about 2 years, lived in Amsterdam and London, kind of went back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene over there in the 90s was insane.
Really?
The clubs were amazing.
Tell me about this.
Latex fashion everywhere. Some of the BDs, I got really lucky in that in Amsterdam, I had met these two couples. They were good friends of mine. They were super hardcore into BDSM. They did crazy shit that would even be crazy by today's standards.
Such as?
Not crazy as in mentally unstable, but crazy as in pushing the limits of BDSM.
Hardcore
edge play.
Edge play? Okay.
Yeah, hardcore edge play.
Example.
Breath control was light and easy for them. Okay. I'm sure that they did blood play and whatnot. But the point is they had so much experience. Mm. And then there's another couple they're a hardcore master and slave, beautiful, beautiful couple.
Yeah.
And every time they started to play at a BDSM club, and all the clubs over there were kind of a combination of BDSM and fetish fashion and dance.
Right.
And no matter what was going on, when this couple, Debbie and Vigor were their names, when they started to play, the entire club stopped. Mm. If someone else was doing a scene, they would just take off the blindfolds and untie their partner and say, you got to watch. Everybody just stop what they're doing to watch every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys would do an entire scene with nothing more than a set of leather restraints and a riding crop. And it was mesmerizing. Now, these are my friends. So between them and another couple, I got to just pick their brains. And so at that time, I met a woman who became my first formal slave.
Right.
And she and I would play and experiment. And I got more and more into the S&M side of things as part of just bondage and role play. And every time we did something and we had questions, they're like, wow, is that how it's supposed to go? We could sit with these couples in Amsterdam and debrief with them.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I got super lucky. And they were my tutors, I guess you could say.
Right. Yeah. This is a common story. People in the scene, you got to have people that take you under their wing and show you how it's really done.
It really helps. Now, nowadays, you know, we kind of live in what's called the post-50 Shades era, which, love it or hate the book, it's opened the conversation massively.
Right.
People have asked me, like, how do you, if you're into BDSM, but you're really shy and nervous about it, and you want to meet someone without going to BDSM club, how would you get the conversation started? Or what would you do if you are going on a date and you want to see if they have an inkling? And my honest recommendation is get a copy of 50 Shades of Grey. You don't have to read it, but leave it out where the person can see it.
Mm.
Right.
And they're probably going to ask about it. And, and then you can gauge from their response, are they into it, are they not into it, and the conversation will go. I got a funny side story.
Please.
Which is that, I mean, I do this for a living. This is my career.
Yeah.
So my mother used to never know what to tell her friends when they said, you know, what does your son do for a living?
And so thank goodness for 50 Shades of Grey.
She would just change the subject. So no joke. She actually now says, when they say, you know, so what does he do for a living? She says, you know the book 50 Shades of Grey? And they're like, yeah, of course. And she says, well, it's kind of like he does that, but in real life, and he teaches people how to do it properly and intelligently. And they're like, oh, that's great. So
your mom has some freaky friends.
No, that's the whole point, is her friends are really normal, conservative people, but 50 Shades of Grey has just thrown that door. So
right, but they read that book and they masturbate.
Oh,
it.
Here's a phone for you. According to the UNESCO Heritage, UNESCO statistics on literacy around the world, and adults over the age of 18 and the actual book sales of 50 Shades of Grey in all forms, including illegal downloads of the e-book, one out of every 37 adults over the age of 18 on Earth has obtained a copy of that book.
I'm sure.
Sure it's more than that. That's just what we know.
Yeah.
Just people that will admit to it.
That's the number crunching.
Yeah.
And so the point is, we live in this era now where the conversation is so wide that people don't have to go through what I went through and be nervous about it. They can go get information so easily.
Everything's on the internet, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you can do it
in privacy. You were going into AOL chat rooms and, like, you had the modem go...
How did you come out to your family, or was it not even an issue?
Nobody was surprised. I think it really... I had a slave, a long-term slaver, living up in Northern California, and...
Well, he had a woman collared, brought her home to mom.
Not
quite, but close. Close. So my mother and her husband came up to one of the places I was living, and I converted one of the rooms into a playroom dungeon.
Right.
And, of course, you know, velvet walls and whipping posts and a suspension bar and a St. Andrew's cross.
Right.
And she walks in there, and she says, so what are you doing here? And I said, yoga.
Yeah.
And then she's like, okay.
Right.
And she's like, well, it's very nicely decorated. And that was it. And so, yeah. And then same thing, my dad came over another time, and same thing. He looked in the room. He's like, wow, you're really into this.
Yeah.
And then he looks over at my I had a glass toy cabinet, and he looks at all the whips and floggers hanging there. He goes, you're really into this.
Yeah.
And then I turned to him, and I said, hey, Dad, remember the time I was staying at your house, and I found that receipt for the pleasure chest? What was that for?
Mm.
And he changed the subject.
That's funny.
I never have these conversations with my
father. No, God, no.
No.
So. Jesus.
Yeah, but this is that's crazy. Wow. I mean, how did you come out to your parents?
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't. Okay. Did they ever? So you were a professional submissive.
I know, right? I had a full time job. I was teaching dance, and I was doing that.
Yeah,
that was a interesting way in.
Yes, a cat is a ballerina. That's cool. I'm not bullshitting. See, so you still teach dance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but you don't. You're not a professional sub anymore.
No. That stopped relatively soon after it started, like 3 months in.
Right.
Why? So like, God.
It fuck with your head, or?
Well, so like originally, I had wanted to like experiment with my sexuality and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for me to be able to feel comfortable and confident to do so, I had to have a trusting relationship. I didn't have that, so Google, how does one get in? Well, like find submission, whatever.
So and in lieu of a relationship, you were getting paid.
So what?
You're getting paid.
To bend over and take a whacking for an hour.
How much is that?
Which cost? I found $100 and $120 an hour, unless the prices have gone up, which probably they did.
Let's see here. I got
stop.
$30 here.
That'll get you 5 minutes.
So that's all I need. But anyway, so no, go ahead.
I'd say more.
Oh,
like,
no. This is getting too serious. This is fun. Comedy.
No.
So let me see if I can make this funny.
You don't have to make it fun. Just tell me what happened. So you wanted to experiment.
Yeah, and I couldn't. And so the next thing on the checklist when I was looking up what to do and how to get into it was, oh, here, you can become a professional submissive and no sex involved. And okay.
Yeah.
And so the mindset switched completely, and then it just became an experiment. And there was absolutely no sexual exchange whatsoever. And so I started, like, wondering what the fuck all of this was, and does what I envision actually exist?
A relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
None of. And so I met some really, really awesome women during my time. And they mentored me and introduced mm-hmm. me to people and... Shortly thereafter, I quit the dungeon, and we'll leave it at that. Let's go back to Master Arcane.
Did you ever manage to find a good DS relationship?
No, never.
Not yet.
Correct, not yet. Not yet.
So what you needed was a 20-year-old woman, apparently.
Maybe.
Willing to experiment like you. A little older woman.
Or a couple of couples.
Yeah, I have a website called arcaneadvice.com, and if you go there, there's a couple articles about how to find somebody, what to look for, how to qualify them.
See, now I know all of this, you know, but it's been so long from the initial, spark.
This is what I was curious about. Do you have that wanting?
That's a good question, because it so resonates with all of these other aspects of my life. But the answer to that question is yes. Have I given up on thinking that I will find that? Yes.
Oh, why? Don't give up.
Don't.
We were having this conversation. This is getting serious. But we were having this conversation.
This is getting good.
But serious. We don't want to be serious.
No, we're going to talk about cat face and all that shit later. Don't worry about it.
No, I want to go back to
your
guest.
We're going to go back. No, just see. Don't tell me how to run my show.
You're right. I'm so sorry.
Don't tell me how to run my show.
I'm sorry.
I will ask you the questions. See, that's nice. Anyway, Master.
Yes.
I didn't. You have an advice column. I glanced past it.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be your advice to find a relationship like this, Or is that necessary?
Is it necessary?
Yeah.
It's not a matter of necessity. It's a matter of desire. Pure desire. If it's someone's passion, if this is what a person wants out of life, is to explore domination, submission, or BDSM. It kind of depends where they're coming from. So domination.
But do you need to be in a relationship, or do you?
It's not that you have to be in a relationship, but if you find someone who makes a good complement, the other side of the coin, you're probably both going to advance and progress together,
right?
In a nice way.
Mm-hmm.
And if it has an actual emotional bond, it gets even better. Like when I'm teaching dominance,
mm-hmm.
I kind of really push. It has to come from a kind-hearted, heart-centered space. Doesn't mean you can't be crazy intense.
Right.
I mean, you can play games that are all about fear and scaring the other person,
mm-hmm.
but you're both into it, obviously. Right. But fundamentally, on a foundational level, the dominant needs to come from a good place, a place that you want to see the other person grow and become more. And if you're going to have this power over them in a daily kind of sense, in a relationship kind of sense, you got kind of responsibility, big responsibility, actually, capital R, to be looking over them and thinking, what can I do that's going to make them a little bit more or better or healthier of a person each day, even just a little bit.
See, and I get that vibe from you, and I get that vibe from Orpheus, I get that vibe from Damon, the people that I know that are in the scene, and I'm a dilettante. I'm never really outside of a little spanking, a little tying up. I haven't really gotten too serious about it. But, you know, you guys are always about bringing the person up.
But
not everybody's like that.
Well, but in the games, we're talking about like in a relationship sense.
Right.
In the games, like one of the most fascinating kinks to me is humiliation. I've only ever had one single slave who was actually into it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's I tell people humiliation play is the most complicated toy that there is.
Right.
Because don't fuck people's with that shit.
Well, it's not
I mean, if you don't know.
If you don't know.
Right.
Or start really, really, really lightly.
Yeah.
But the flip side is I have this friend who was a dominatrix from England. She came over with her male slave, and this guy was so into humiliation play. And he was a proper, successful businessman, really cool, fun guy. And we went to a fetish club up in San Francisco, and she just drilled into him, and people were standing around, and she was laying into him and just tearing him a new one verbally and just ripping him apart with humiliation. And afterward, and you could just see the smile get bigger and bigger and bigger. And
on his face and hers?
On both of them.
Really?
On both of them. Oh, yeah. And afterwards, we're driving around, and I said, you got to explain this to me. And he said, the more people who witness it, the more he enjoys it, the more he gets off on it. And again, this is like just a normal dude you'd be hanging out with. And
he's
very eloquent, too, which is nice. So he could explain it very, very clearly. And so you can have games like that. If the people are into that, if that's both people's kink, and they both negotiated, that's how they want to play, and that's how hard they want to go, that's awesome. But the other side we're talking about is the daily relationship side, which kind of needs to be thought of as a garden. You know, and both the dominant and the submissive are the gardeners. And they both have to work on it and keep it healthy and keep the weeds out, just like in any healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a relationship. You know, you still have normal. But the thing also is that in BDSM relationships and DS relationships, things that vanilla couples take for granted, we cannot do. We can't. Vanilla couples will get in an argument and they'll go silent on each other for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in a DS relationship. You have to have really good communication.
Mm-hmm.
You have to constantly be talking and debriefing. I just gave a speech in Atlanta on my belief that the BDSM community can present a role model for modern social maturity. All of these things we're hearing about consent violations. So without even taking a side.
Right.
Imagine if you know the Aziz Ansari story.
The hashtag Me Too, all that stuff,
Well, and of course, Harvey Weinstein, who doesn't know about that?
Yeah, piece of shit. And now,
but imagine,
now we're at the Nerdist studio with Chris Hardwick.
Yeah. Yeah. So pushing the Harvey Weinstein situation aside, because that one's kind of...
He's just an ass. Okay. Yeah.
But look at the Aziz Ansari story.
Right.
And imagine if they had grown up in the same world that BDSM people for decades have been checking in with each other, making sure we're on the same page, having safe words, negotiating before we play. This is all before we play. So imagine if those guys had grown up in a world where they did the same thing. So Aziz Ansari takes her, go back to his apartment, and he says, so what are you into?
Right.
That simple little conversation. You know, so again, I'm thinking that this is what I'm saying, BDSM and a lot of stuff we do in the BDSM world and DS world makes a good role model for the world to evolve from where it is now into a more conscientious relationship-oriented lifestyle for everybody, not just BDSM, even if people are not into BDSM, just the verbal, the communication practice.
But I've seen people in the community that aren't as evolved as you.
Right.
That have had... they're just as Me Too as anybody else.
Yeah, yeah. There's not,
and not only that, they take advantage of the fact that somebody. I'm sorry if it's
getting close to heart.
Just to take advantage of people that.
Yeah. Yeah, not everybody in the scene is an angel. That's just a fact.
Right, right.
But you know,
it is a power play. I mean, it is.
If people like myself and Damon and Orpheus, if we can get out there and teach people that, hey, not only can this be amazing for both people,
yes,
not only can it be beautiful for both people,
right,
you can make sure it's easy to make sure that both people come away having had a great time,
right.
And it just, we just kind of take a lot of pleasure in teaching people this and letting them know that, hey, you really can make this great for everybody involved.
What's the strangest safe word that you've ever had to use? you got something on your mind right now, I know.
I'll tell you the funniest safe word I ever had.
Yeah, let's hear this.
Okay, so this guy teaches a workshop, and he has somebody volunteer from the audience. They come up on stage, and he says, okay, so we got to be very careful about this. So I want you to remember that no matter how hard I go, you can stop this with one safe word, and that safe word is more. So, I mean, anything you say for it, most people use red, yellow, green.
Right.
Somebody I actually know, I can't remember who it is, used the word spoon. That was their safe word. They didn't have multiples. Yeah, I know. It's like the cliche story.
Yeah.
Well,
you said you were dating a competitive motorcycle racer.
Yeah.
Or she was your sub.
Yeah.
I say dating, but I guess it was your sub.
She was my slave, yeah.
So your slave.
Yeah, fully contracted, collared, the whole 10 deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And for people that don't know what that is, that's...
It's signs of mutual commitment.
Right.
You know,
so it is a relationship, but not necessarily in vanilla.
Not vanilla at all.
Right. And it's like, is it like the pimp world that if she looks at somebody else, she's in trouble?
Again, the important thing in a DS relationship is the initial negotiation.
Right.
So you got to identify what are your limits. What are your hard limits? What are your soft limits? What are you never going to be into? What might you get into later once you build trust?
Okay.
And you got to state this. If both people have said, in fact, you know what makes the biggest mistake on this is the dominance.
Right.
Because there's so much of this myth that, oh, the sub has to state their limits and the dom decides, goes, yes, okay, fine. But the dominant has to state it too. If the dominant doesn't want to do something, they need to make that clear too. I hate micromanaging.
Right.
I'll help someone. I'll go out and my way to use my talents to help my sub easily.
Right.
But I don't want to micromanage them. So I actually had a sub come to me, and she wanted me to micromanage her. And I was like, sorry, that's really not my style. I don't want to do that.
Well, what do you mean by micromanaging?
It got out of control. It was like, she'd say, what would you like me to do? And I'm busy working. I have a real life, so I'm busy working.
Oh, one of those.
I know, one of those real life. And she said, what do you want me to do? And I said, you know what? There's a book. I want you to go get that book off the bookshelf, and I want you to start reading it. And she was like a college professor, so she jammed through it. She read the whole thing super fast.
Now what do you want me to do?
Yeah, no,
what do you want for dinner? What do you want
not as much what do you want for dinner, but it was like, give me an order, give me an order.
Oh, she kept wanting to, oh, wow.
It was one step shy of, may I breathe now? Yes. May I breathe now? Yes. Yeah. May I breathe now? Yes. And I finally said, look, I can't do this. I'm not doing this.
Right.
So the point is, the initial negotiation is when two people really need to state what they're into, what they're not into, both people, and get that on the table up front. So if one person's really into, if their hard limit is that they're an edge player and they really need to do edge play, which is, edge play just means extreme S&M. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with knives or edges. It just means.
You can, though.
But the edge of physical
limit,
the edge of mental limit, the edge of emotional limit. And if one person's really into that and they need that to be happy as a dominant or a sub and the other person's not into that, they might be able to play together and be play partners at a club and have a nice scene. But in terms of long-term fulfillment, it might not work out.
So where's this? It sounds like you need a lawyer. Where's this intense negotiation? Does this happen before you start playing or after you start playing?
No, it should happen before. Definitely should happen.
So you meet a girl.
Yeah.
You're attracted to
mutual attraction. I got a perfect story for you.
Okay.
So my longest slave that I've ever had, we were together for 8.5 years.
Okay.
We both met at a BDSM event up in San Francisco.
Okay.
We had mutual friends. And she comes walking over, and she sits next to me, and we're all sitting in a little group of four. And I turned to her at some point, and I said, so what are you into?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, I'm really into bondage and role play. And I said, really? That's awesome. I'm into bondage and role play, too, as a dominant. And so that night, we played at the club, and boom, beginning of an 8-year relationship. But the point is, that little bit of negotiation, what are you into?
Right.
It's really that easy. And that's kind of one of the points I'm trying to make with the stuff I'm teaching, is that this is easy. This is not complicated. You don't have to be a skilled lawyer, speaker, or anything. You just simply say, you know what you're... It's the Oracle of Delphi. Know thyself, you know?
See, I think this is a new book for you. I think. what are you into?
It's in my book.
Because you know how he's not just not that into you was like
yes,
a big hit.
Yes, yes.
What are you into? Right. I think
that's
it'd
a
be
great title.
Big hit.
But exactly. Here's my question to you. Because it all sounds.
And by the way,
fantastic.
look at those eyes. Meow. Go ahead.
Yeah, please.
So what happens if the two of you don't even speak the same language?
You mean literally?
No. Like rhetorically, in the sense of, like, pretend for a moment. Yeah. I'm a newbie, right? Mm-hmm. I think I know certain things, but I really don't know much of anything. Mm-hmm. And you tell me, like, I don't know if maybe perhaps you've already made the assumption that I should know certain things, but you explain to me that you are poly. Mm-hmm. I have one idea of what that is in my mm-hmm. mind, and you assume I understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You should ask what. No. How do you define poly?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a brilliant question, by the way. This is great. So, the beginning to start with, the best thing someone like you would want to do in this imaginary situation.
This is Mark.
Right. So you'd want to make it clear that you're a beginner.
I'm not poly.
Nor am I.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's what I was asking.
You want to make it clear you're a beginner. And then the dominant, who supposedly has lots of experience, does kind of have an added responsibility at that point to sort of help lead you through identifying your hard and soft limits.
But even aside from that, like, if you don't know mm-hmm. to ask, how can you possibly ask? Well, like, in terms of anything.
Give me an example. Like, let's role play this right here. Go ahead.
Let's take the poly example.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about...
All right, so you went out with this guy.
No,
poly. I just had an experience where a woman...
Yeah, please, share.
I started dating a woman, and she was poly, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, literally, she, like, our second date, she's like, oh, by the way, I want you to come over on game night and meet my other lovers. I'm like, fuck this. I'm not playing Scrabble with the other guys and the winner gets a blowjob. I'm not doing that.
One of the other things that's really important, when it comes to poly, I'm just going to say this aside. Okay, I'm personally, in my relationship now, we are not poly. We're completely monogamous, but I've been in poly relationships. And what I can say, one of the most important things is exactly what Mark just said, which is you have to identify what they mean by poly. There's so many kinds of poly. There's this beautiful.
Right,
have
I
you
agree.
Seen this? There's this beautiful Venn diagram that somebody made. It's got like 27 little components,
right.
And it's all about all the different kinds of poly. There's so many variations to that word. It's important to you know what does that mean to you. For some person, it might mean we're a tight couple, but once in a blue moon we pick up a third. For someone else, it means completely open relationship,
right.
Et cetera.
Right.
But, like, in
right, so some people, it's I have 10 monogamous relationships. They don't know anything
about
each
other. Well, no,
sounds
but
like
I mean,
this guy.
But, well, no, I'm just saying, like, just even in life, right? I mean, we know only what we know. We only know our experience. We can imagine what somebody else's experience, but we never know. And, like, when you're
unless
just getting...
Unless you ask.
But I know, but at, like, what point is that appropriate and inappropriate? Does it matter anymore?
In the beginning, during that initial negotiation, that is the time to ask. That's the time to bring it up, to say what you do
but
know,
if you don't
know.
Even
have you ever
know.
Negotiated with a man?
Yes, I have. But the thing is that I don't know what I don't know. So if I don't but know to ask, then
say,
why would I?
You could say what you'd like to try. You could say, and you can certainly ask the other person. You have every right to ask the dominant, what are you into? And find out what they want to do. And it's their responsibility, and the same, both of you have this responsibility,
right.
To say, I'm really into hardcore metal bondage and caging, and that I need that in every scene. And you can say, wow, that kind of freaks me out. I don't think I want to do that. What about maybe some mild, light bondage with neckties or something like that? And he can say, no, it's too light for me. And you can say, well, it's not going to work out.
Now, by the way, go ahead. Don't hit me.
No. I just wanted.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
I wasn't going to say anything.
No, go ahead. You have permission to say what you were going to say.
At this time, I have nothing to say.
I totally forgot.
I swear. Okay.
No, I was going to say, is dominant the proper term for a guy?
Because
dominatrix is like, oh, it's such a beautiful term, but there's nothing good for guys.
Well, dominant just means the role.
Right.
So you can have a male dominant. Dominatrix is assigned to females as a role,
right,
whether they're biological or not. Domina, D-O-M-I-N-A, is also assigned to females, same.
Right.
Dom, D-O-O-M-E, and by the way, yes, D-O-O-M-E, or D-O-M-M-E,
mm-hmm,
is pronounced Dom.
Right.
It's not pronounced Dom-A, and when I hear that, it makes me cringe. So there's
me and my Dom-A were hanging out.
I'm like, what the fuck is that?
So, yeah, so there's multiple terms for the female.
So what's the difference between a dominatrix and a domina?
Dominatrix tends to be assigned to people who are professional,
okay,
paid clients.
And domina is an amateur. Domina
is a bigger umbrella.
Oh, okay. But dominant, because there's no good term for a guy.
Female can be called a dominant.
Yeah.
Guys are
Doms.
Masters,
yeah,
or dominants.
Sirs.
Or
sirs. When I tell people that you're going to be on the show, it's like, he's a dom. I don't know what to say.
Dom, again, if you don't worry about whether or not it ends in a D-O-M or D-O-M-M-E, it's another general term for everybody.
Right.
I can tell you quite honestly, 99% of all the male dominants I know don't worry about it.
Right. No, I understand. Well, I'm talking about vanilla people. I'm like, oh, I have a master on, and they're like,
The only thing I'd say is that the difference between a dominant and a master.
Yeah.
Dominant to me just means how they identify in terms of the dichotomy of submissive,
mm-hmm,
or dominant.
Right.
Or switch, by the way. There's, right, you know, switch is an important thing because some people are into both.
No, we've had switches on the show.
And so once they know that they're a dominant, to me, master, at least the way I define it, the Crow Academy, is you're a master when you have a slave. And a master and slave is a kind of relationship,
mm-hmm,
and it usually involves some kind of evolution together, some kind of commitment to each other. So all masters and slaves are dominants and submissives, but not all dominants and submissives are masters and slaves. And it's not that a master has to say, well, I have 25 years under my belt, but they do have to kind of, in my opinion, again, Crow Academy style, they have to kind of cross a certain line of showing that they can take the responsibility for the submissive's well-being, what it means to own a slave, what it means to have to design a curriculum,
mm-hmm,
for a submissive.
Oh, really? You have to get that involved?
Say.
Wow.
I would. This is the Crow Academy style, so I should qualify this.
Tell us about the Crow Academy. I was getting to this.
The Crow Academy style is a very romantic style.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very relationship-oriented.
Right.
It's got a lot of foundations built on trying to go for longevity as a couple.
Right.
Whether or not that couple is also poly, that's up to them. I don't push that you have to be monogamous. I do try to explain that a master and slave together, or dominant sub, it can apply to any gender, by the way. It's not just male dominant,
right,
female,
right,
submissive. That I try to push, how far can you go and how beautiful can you make that garden between the dominant and the submissive? Now, and again, if that involves other people, that's fine. One of my best friends who lives over in Australia,
mm-hmm,
he's in a master-slave relationship. They are as poly as they can get. But if, mm-hmm, you ask me, are they living the Crow Academy set of ethics, if you want,
right,
of relationship foundation goals? Absolutely.
When did you found the Crow Academy?
What is this Crow Academy?
The Crow Academy is my school. It started a long time ago. started back in the 90s. And it's had various actual physical incarnations.
Right.
And it's also just the general, the name for all of the educational materials that I put out on the subject.
So what made you in the 90s and you were still pretty fresh?
Sorry?
I said, what made you in the 90s and you were still pretty fresh think, you know what, I can teach this?
Just the fact that a lot of people kept coming up to me and asking me.
Okay.
And the fact that I have a somewhat Native American background.
Okay.
My little sister turned to me one day and she said, did you notice that everywhere you go, crows are always hanging out around you? And I'm sitting there thinking, like, because, you know, I don't know if you know much about Native American tradition, mm-hmm, but there's such a thing as a totem animal, an animal that sort of picks you, and that's, mm-hmm, going to be your animal. And they went to town with this in certain movies and whatnot.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and right. Everybody's like, mm-hmm, I want to be the cougar and I want to be an eagle. And she says, yeah, I think your totem animal is the crow. And I was sort of like, I know, oh my God, or the
How
crow.
How goth.
Why did I have to be the crow? exactly. And that's sort of like, okay, I can handle this. And then I did more research, and then the crow, it turns out in Native American tradition and in Eastern European myth and legend,
mm-hmm,
the crow is the bringer of law and discipline. And I was like, eh, that's strangely appropriate.
Call me the crow.
So that's where the name came from. And just one thing led to another, and I was invited into some amazing closed BDSM societies and groups where there was one that was entirely edge players, and we all just learned together and taught each other, and we had private parties, and we held public parties, and all kinds of stuff. So it was the 90s was really an amazing time to grow, and I'll tell you one thing that was kind of a beautiful outcome of a terrible situation, which is that, if you remember the late 80s and the early 90s, that was the AIDS era. That was when it was at its worst.
Right.
And so what happened in San Francisco in particular, because that was where a lot of the AIDS awareness was happening, was they had their parties there were so strict. If you were ever caught intoxicated, if you're ever caught on any kind of drugs, we're talking pot upwards or alcohol or anything, you were out. You were booted out of the party. If it happened twice,
whoops.
if it happened twice, you could get blacklisted from the party permanently.
Oh,
but the beauty of this is that me and all of my peers and all of my friends at the time, we had to push ourselves to learn that BDSM on its own was this amazing drug, this amazing
right.
way to get an altered state of consciousness. And so that's what came out of this. And so that this completely sober learning environment was at its most affluent, at its most just in everybody's face, and we all were there, and so that's where the Crow Academy grew out of that.
Right. So, is it an online thing?
Yes, very much. So the Crow crowacademy.com is the main portal, and then Arcane Advice, and that's where we're actually about to release a members area, and that's going to be a whole amazing thing.
Right.
But there's a lot going on there. ArcaneAdvice.com is my always been free, always going to be free lessons, just free lessons for
for cats and whoever else can log in between logins.
Exactly. ArcaneAdvice.com is a free, it's got dozens and dozens of free lessons dealing with very complicated issues that come up in domination submission, but it's also got a lot of stuff for beginners. So I really recommend beginners.
Has anybody stumped you?
No, never.
Really?
I've been asked every single question you could possibly imagine when it comes to BDSM. That's why when I go in front of a new audience, I'm like, ask me anything. They're like, oh, I can't ask you that. I'm all embarrassed. I'm like, no, go ahead. It's really okay.
Right.
Let me do the groundwork for you. And so, yeah, I mean, you could ask me anything you want right now.
Okay. I want to know about Because we're going to
what
know.
What are you into?
Well, I'm not into this, but I'm just wondering.
You're and so
I,
into this.
No, I'm not. And I try not to judge. And I really do. You know, for me, whatever.
Just ask a question.
But the poop and the pee.
Ah. What about it? Okay. I can talk about that. So
please, because I don't understand.
Okay. So I'm not personally into that. But what I can tell you is that the golden showers and scat play is a fetish. Mm-hmm. I did have a slave who turned to me one day, and we were taking a shower together, and she says, I really want you to pee on me. And my attitude was, what the heck? Let's see if this is fun.
Uh-huh.
So I did.
Right. Try anything once.
And yeah, she tried it. She did it. And she seemed to enjoy it, but having tried it, it didn't really, you know, jump up the thermometer of like, oh, that's completely hot. So some people are into it. I used to know a dom who he literally insisted that every morning his slave wake up and drink his pee. And that's their kink. Now, I think the fundamental question you need to ask is, A, is it consensual?
Yeah.
Of course. B, and when I say consensual, I mean really actually, again, initial negotiation kind of stuff of like, are you into this?
Right.
That's definitely something that needs to be negotiated.
Yeah, exactly. And when it comes to scat play, people are into that, and again, what I was going to say is that the fundamental thing you need to boil it down to is there any possible permanent harm that's going to come out of this? And if you're talking maybe edge players who want to play with this kind of stuff, you know, you really get down to dominatrix I used to know put it really well. She said, I will hurt you, but I will never actually harm you.
Right.
And that's a really good way to think about it, is that if people are doing all these different kinks, including urine and scat play and whatnot, if both people are into it,
that's brilliant.
And both people are coming away having a good time.
Like Damon Pierce said that on the show too.
What?
I'm gonna hurt you, but not
on
you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So would you apply that same philosophy, if you will, to like, because right now we're just talking human to human, but
sure,
like bestiality or necrophilia.
Well, okay, so really quickly.
Yes.
I am not now nor ever advocating anybody do anything illegal.
Right.
Okay. Right. No. I understand what you're saying.
That has to do with local jurisdiction as well. So there's obvious stuff, and then there's also local jurisdictions, mm-hmm. like maybe in some states, this thing might be legal and that thing might not be legal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've never again tried.
No. I'm sorry, and perhaps I'm going too deep. I was actually asking more on a like philosophical level. Well, like,
was this an answer to the question, what are you into?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Bestiality and.
Well, no. Like, I mean, I'm not. Look, I need to preface this by saying I am not judging or anything. I'm just asking the questions I've never had the balls to ask.
No, I'm judging. If somebody's blowing a dog, I'm not into it.
Yeah. No.
I'm judging you. I am judging you.
Yes, I am.
If somebody's
too.
Fucking a dead person.
No. Absolutely.
Get a really pasty white goth chick. Trust me, it works a lot better. She can play dead. Now, I think what the question you're asking is.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest fetish that you've ever... What's the last time
you're right.
What's the last time you were shocked at a fetish?
The last time I was shocked at a fetish event, a fetish club.
Or there was something that you had not heard of that was like, wow, what is that?
Well, that's a great thing because one of the philosophies of Crow Academy is that there is no upper limit to how much you can grow or learn something new every time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been at this for decades, and I love going to a club and seeing somebody do something that I've never seen before.
Right.
So I've seen some cool stuff, but my usual reaction is, you know, I go up to that person afterwards. You never interrupt a scene, but you go up afterwards and you say, excuse me, can I ask you how you did that, what you used, you know, things I need to know, safety parameters, all these things, and you learn. It's wonderful. As far as the weirdest thing I've ever seen at a club, man, I'd really have to rack my brain.
Yeah.
I've been at it for so long. The bar of what is weird has gotten really
and,
low.
And really, I mean, next to you, I'm vanilla soft serve. But when we had Damon here and we had Mimpenzi Barbie who's a switch.
Yeah, what did he say?
Yeah,
they were talking about what's the ginger root? What do they call that with the ginger roots?
The ginger root, right? Figging.
Figging.
What is this?
Are you familiar with figging?
No,
because everybody in the straight world that I told were they blew their mind.
Yeah.
Figging is where you take a ginger root, you peel it, so it's exposed.
Right.
You shape it.
Okay.
And you stick it.
Someplace.
That place.
Up the butt.
Oh, the butt. Yeah. And what is that supposed to do?
It burns.
I would imagine.
That's figging.
Now, my reaction to that is that, to me, I'm not trying to diss that. If someone's into that, that's awesome. It's harmless. If both people are having a good time, awesome.
Right.
But an easier way to do that, the slave that I was with for 8 years, we did a lot of knife play where, fortunately, one of the very close groups I was in, one of the members was a professional doctor/surgeon. Mm-hmm. And he actually taught the group privately about how skin is constructed and, you know, if you're going to cut somebody with a knife, how to do it as safely as possible within the S&M world. So she and I, at that time, were into playing with this. It's skin is actually amazing, by the way. It's incredible. And there's 25 layers of skin. And you don't really get to the dangerous level until you get about 8 layers in. So if you're just taking a very, very sharp knife and barely cutting the skin, as you'll see some people doing very heavy, hardcore S&M clubs, and then they have to like slap the skin to get the blood to come up to the surface, they're definitely not penetrating past those 8 layers. And so she and I used to play with this a lot. And then afterwards, we'd all, like after the BDSM club, we'd all go out for like a late breakfast at some 24-hour restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would reach over and I'd have her put her arm, you know, her arm where it might be a cut or something like that, and I'd grab the Tabasco sauce, and I'd take a little bit, and I'd just rub it in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You get a fun, burning sensation. She was a hardcore masochist. She loved it. I had a good time. And a lot less, you know, expense in the grocery produce department, you know?
That's just a lot of waste, dude.
Aren't that?
Ginger root.
I know. I mean, you can make juice. All that delicious ginger root.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
So
it's just a shame. Just spread the cheeks and pour the Tabasco.
Yeah. Okay, it's there cheaper. You go.
Well, yeah. I put it on her arm just to be
sure.
Right, but I guess you could throw it in the ass or maybe eat it out, whatever. Sure. Who knows?
This is Los Angeles. Salt, it's probably a colonic.
If you've got a burning or an open wound, salt actually, I think, burns more than Tabasco.
Wait, I got to write this down.
But
you know that. Stop it.
I don't know about salt in the anus.
I've never tried that.
Mm.
Right, Tabasco versus salt.
Well, the night is young.
Right.
And salt in the anus.
All right.
That sounds like the name.
Trevor.
Of the band. I think that's a Swedish heavy metal band.
Are you on it?
Yeah. Salt in the anus. Yeah, that's the next book next after. What is it that you're into?
What is it that you're into, exactly?
So at this point now, I mean, you've seen everything, you've done and everything. What is it that you're into?
I go back to my roots. I'm really into bondage. My partner and I do amazing role plays.
Yeah.
And
is there anything you can describe for our audience?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We're both Star Wars fans, but she's really a Star Wars fan. She's seriously a Star Wars fan.
Well, we're going to get some nerdy stuff here.
And so I go, oh, yeah, man. Nerdy stuff is great for role play scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So she, for some birthday or Christmas or something like that, I got her this you know, she's got a beautiful body. So I got her the skin tight Boba Fett leggings and top from, you know, little crop top.
Right.
And then we did this entire role play that went on for hours and hours and hours, where I was a Darth Vader, you know, similar person, and she was Boba Fett, what assassin or whatever Boba Fett's character.
Bounty hunter.
Bounty hunter, thank you. And I just...
I can't believe I corrected him.
Oh, my God. I interrogated her.
I have no idea.
Interrogated the hell out of her, interrogated her, and then, you know, of course, she's a female and male, so we did this whole... We made it sexual, and... It was awesome.
But yeah, Boba Fett in the movies is a man, so there's a kind of a weird gay element there.
It was female Boba Fett.
No, I got it.
It wasn't specifically Boba Fett. I was specifically Darth Vader, and she wasn't specifically Boba
Fett.
Right.
It was, yes. It was your own extended universe.
Exactly. And the fun part is that, you know, if people are out there who have, they want to let their imaginations run wild, I can honestly say that for the both of us, our apartment just kind of vanished for a couple hours.
Right.
And we were there on the Death Star. And this was happening on the Death Star. And we did not break character. And it was full of bondage and S&M and sex. And it was freaking awesome.
Lightsabers?
No, well, yeah, one, but it was fleshy and attached.
I got it.
I was going to say.
I think the closest I've ever come, I fucked a girl in my Green Lantern underwear. But that's a whole different story.
Please do tell.
That was it.
I had my what led up? What led
like,
up to
I was
it?
Like, I, no, I was. I took off my clothes.
No, I, before that.
I we took off. I we were making out. I took off.
But before that.
What? We went. We were in a hotel.
Okay. Before. Start from the beginning. Is this a new female?
No, this is years ago. This is years ago.
A random female?
No, this is somebody I was going out with.
Oh, okay.
And I had a big boner in my Green Lantern underwear.
But why were you in Green Lantern underwear to begin with?
Because the movie came out. It was on sale. Yeah. So.
Okay.
I wasn't playing that I was Green Lantern.
He's revealing his geek side.
Yes.
I know.
Yes. Geeks are awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just making it.
We're here at the former Nerdist School Studios now. Before, and where does the time go? I mean, we can just no, it's we're almost out of time.
How convenient.
I'll tell you afterwards. Okay. Trust me. Do you want to role play or something? Is that what you want to do?
I just wanted the story.
Do you want me to be Green Lantern, have a ring?
Yes, please. And everybody, yes, please.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Right. I'll
next week?
Yeah, if you want. Sure, I'll come over to your house.
No, the show.
No,
right?
Well, no, we got other guests on the show. I don't know who it is yet, but I've got an idea. The gas mask, what was that for?
Okay, so the gas mask.
So I've seen those.
Yeah, two of my tutors back then, they were in the couples.
Right.
So one of them was this guy who he used to, both he and her were models in the fetish fashion show all the time.
Right.
And that was one of their, they were very connected to one of the main latex clothing stores who did a lot of the parties over there in Amsterdam. And he always showed up in a full male head-to-toe latex cat suit. And army boots, and like some kind of a vest, like for holding gear,
right.
And a gas mask. And this is, I was brand new to this at the time. And
yeah.
Like my early fetish clubs. And finally, one day I turned to him and I was like, dude, what is the whole deal about the gas mask?
Yeah,
yeah. Like,
I've never asked.
He put it beautifully. He said, when he puts on the gas mask, it creates this feeling that he's watching the world through this glass, through the window, but not quite participating. Like he's still in his own secret private world on the inside of the gas mask and watching everything happen around. So it almost makes him feel like an alien observing the right. human race. Mm. And so I kind of ran with that for a little while. Now, I wasn't really into gas masks myself, but I had subs in it, and certain gas masks are really fun for anything from a variation on a gag to you can use them for a fairly safe method of breath control. You just kind of cover the opening, and then when you see the gas mask rubber going like this really fast, you release it, and then the air comes back in. Plus, they don't fully seal, so a lot of fun there. But as the dominant wearing the gas mask, I used to have people just kind of give me toys and just say, here, you know, I'd have parties, and they'd just say, oh, here's some fun stuff to add to your toy collection. And I think it was the son of the owner of Mr. S. Leather in San Francisco shows up with this gas mask, and he's like, here's a new one for your collection. And it has a horse head shape.
Right.
And I did a lot of theater. I did like 10 years of theater, and I thought, wow, what if I wore this? And I'm thinking like Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, bottom of the ass, right? And I take on like a horse head as I'm doing the various shows and performances.
Right.
And then I also would have my slave at the
Shakespeare
time.
Shakespeare, Graham Wilde.
Yeah, exactly.
<I'd have laughs> Next
my,
title.
My slave would wear a mask. Sorry. She got one of those China doll masks with the mime mask.
Right.
And we just started doing all of our shows. We would do in gas masks and stage masks and whatnot. And it took just an ordinary BDSM performance, and it kind of pushed it up to be more of a theatrical performance.
Mm. Wow.
And people really, really liked it, so it just kind of became a signature thing that I do.
Wow. And I know you're a world traveler.
Yes.
So, and I think this is your one of your last days in L.A. Where are you going from here?
Heading back over to Europe.
Yeah.
And going to explore around there for a while, go hit some fetish clubs over there.
Now, do you have a slave in every city that you go to?
No, I have one permanent slave, Daphne.
And she comes with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're this is all year. You're all around the world. You're in Europe. You're here. You're there.
This coming year, yeah. This gives me a lot of travel. A lot of travel. We're here to explore and find out what's going on out there in the world and find some other communities, and connect and keep working on the Crow Academy. Keep turning out videos and. There's the Master Arcane YouTube channel now.
Oh, really?
That's blowing up. That's
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, check that out. That's got some good videos on there and more coming.
Great.
And we got a new video, a new website called CrowSecrets.com, which is our BDSM online magazine, mostly about what's going on with the Crow Academy, but some other like articles and fun stuff in there. So we're trying to take that in kind of a more fun, novel direction.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Damon was right on.
Yeah.
This guy's great.
Good.
So, how do people get a hold of you? Give us all your websites. Okay. All the thing. I know everybody's going to be listening to this. They want advice.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so arcaneadvice.com is dozens of free lessons. Mm-hmm. So start there, and there's the first article on the website is how to use the website. Treat it like a library. Crowacademy.com is where they can find out all about what the Crow Academy is about and see lots of variations. There's pictures from the shows. There's videos from shows. There's going to be a members area that's going to open up. We're going to have lots of educational videos and instructional videos, instructional materials, free ebooks if they sign up at the Crow Academy website, which is just also crowacademy.com/signup.
Right.
I think there's a hyphen in the sign up, though. They get a free 20-page ebook on getting started safely with domination submission. That's for free just for signing up.
Oh, come on.
Then we have crowsecrets.com, which is the online magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Every website has a sign-up button and a contact button. People can write and ask me questions directly. I try to get to the questions. Sometimes I get like a month behind.
Right.
The Master Arcane YouTube channel, we're now up to 5,000 subscribers and about 500,000 views. And we have a six-part, completely free series there, Domination Submission Basics, which a lot of people seem to be getting good value on.
Right.
The video of the talk I gave about BDSM as a role model for social maturity is up there. We got four more videos.
Well, what's the biggest video you got on your channel?
The six-part series, Domination Submission Basics. Right. Yeah.
Mine's when I went to the BBW convention, but that's just my channel. And what else you got going on?
We got the book,
mm-hmm.
Igniting the Fire, The Art of Romantic Submission, 372 pages, pretty much an A through Z guide on how to build a dominant submissive relationship.
Right.
Photos are by Ken Marcus and Perry Gallagher.
Oh, great.
So you got hundreds of photos in there just to kind of give the whole experience and journey from the physical all the way through the psychological, all the way through to traditional and where all this stuff came from.
Right.
And helping people build their own relationship. It's all Crow Academy style. So again, I want to point out that Damon Pierce, he has a different style.
Right.
Orpheus Black has a different style. My friend in Australia has a different style, and that's fine. Anybody who has an evolved style of domination and submission that's making both people happy, I'm totally for that.
This is one style, and you can take this and run with it. And you can develop your own style
When dominants come to train with me privately, I tell them at the end, the final chapter of this journey is going to be you're going to develop your own style.
Right.
So the Crow Academy style is very romance-based, very relationship-based, and very longevity-based.
Right. And there's some edge play in there, too.
Yeah. And there's edge play.
So you're into edge play. I've caught that a few times.
I'm into edge play when the other person's into it, because if they're not into it, it doesn't work.
Right.
But Igniting the Fire, The Art of Romantic Submission, is a Kindle ebook.
Okay.
And the hardback, which has been 10 years in development, just got on Amazon this week.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So go to Amazon, Master Arcane. And Kat?
Yes.
Kat's Cabaret, Kat's Entertainment.
Yes, Kat's-Entertainment, Kat's Cabaret, Booby Kat's.
Yes.
Save the Boobies. And
Catface.
Catface, J-Kat's. I mean, yes, I've trademarked it all.
How do people take dance lessons from you?
Kat'sCabaret.com.
Yes. And she's quite limber, Trent, let me tell you. It's been a pleasure, Kat.
It's been lovely, Mark.
Yes.
Master. Sir.
Thank you.
So, anyway. Are you going to pull out the Green Lantern pants now?
Yes!
I'm not wearing my Green Lantern underwear here, but Master Arcane Kat's, it's been great, everybody. Have a wonderfully creepy week. Go to Goth Comedian on all social media. Have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Thank you.